Welcome to our lunchtime date together with me, John Ballam. I am an organizational development consultant, I'm an educator, and I'm a coach with a passion for lifelong learning. With me today is my partner in crime, Gifty.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gifty Parker, HR professional with a background in learning and development, performance management, as well as talent management.
So for the next 20 minutes, we invite you to sit back, find a glass of something nice, and enjoy an unusual conversation with us. Our listeners are going to want to know this. So I want to piggyback that with the other question. So, you know, what do you do now in terms of your career, and how do you add value to your clients? Because, hey, like I said, there are million consultants out there, many agencies out there. But I'm friends with you because you're unique and I believe you do add value, you know? I thought you were a fraud, we wouldn't be talking. So what is it you do that's so special? I have a sense of I know what that is. What is it? What do you do and how do you add that value?
Oh, absolutely. So what I do is actually something I very much enjoy and I have been enjoying for quite a long time now. And I kind of have a strong feeling that it's going to be the case for a long, long time to come. So within HR, I wanted to focus on areas that I had qualification, areas where I actually enjoy working in. And that has to do with learning and development, talent management, and as well as performance management. As a consulting firm here in BC, it's actually quite interesting because when I benchmark my competitors, I find that we currently seem to be, I want to say one, the only, but I would say one of the, because it's a long time since I did this research, one of the few organizations that does cover those three aspects of HR, where you have the training, learning and development, and of course, onboarding of new employees. And that's a niche for us. And that's something that we're very proud of, to work with clients throughout the spectrum, throughout the lifespan of their employee within the organization. So we don't just bring the employees into the organization, but we work with them to ensure that the employees will get the right training to do the job and the right learning to develop themselves. And as well, how do we evaluate that development? How do we measure that development? And so that's quite an interesting aspect of what I do.
Yeah, I want to stop because you say such rich things and you move so fast. And I want to mine some of the stuff for you for our listeners. So you talked about following the employee cycle, which is great, you know, from onboarding, training and development to the exiting of the organization, right? So what would you say? And I did say, you can just say three things if you like. Three of the most critical things in terms of onboarding. If you had to say a new startup is starting tomorrow and they're going to start onboarding and they're not very experienced, what do you say are three of the most critical things that that startup must do to make sure that they start the right way with those employees? What would they be?
Oh, that's a very good question. I think when it comes to onboarding, one of the most important is expectation. And I think we tend to forget that. We'll be like, oh, you know, we posted the job description. They see the job description. They come on. We tell them about our value, culture, and boom, we're ready to roll. Well, we miss that big gap because you have to consider the fact that somebody is coming to your organization. Yes, they may have reviewed the job description, but a lot of times when I work with employers, their job descriptions was last evaluated or analyzed months and years ago. So a startup, did you actually create that job description? Did you do a job analysis? Or is it something you picked up online? Yes. Whatever the case is, if you understand that and create that understanding in terms of the role. So I always actually say to people, your onboarding should include the section where you're reviewing those criteria.
Yes.
Right. So I'm going to sit with you and say, okay, you've gotten the job. Let's go through this. Where is it that is unclear? And where is it that, you know, there I can, is. You know, give you more information. So that helps to avoid that uncertainty and that fear a new person would normally get when they come into a new role. Oh, I don't know what to do. So that kind of creates a lot of ease for the new individual coming into the world because they know you help them to start succeeding and, you know, actually succeeding faster. You help them to start being productive faster when right. you can establish what is that expectation. So that's one.
Right.
Another one is that connection. You know, find as well, some people would assign the onboarding to members of their team. And the leaders, it's that there's no connection. You know, some leaders will come in and say, hello, welcome, and that's it. You know, you want to build that line of connection, yes. Communication from that first day away. Mm-hmm. You know, establish either you're there through their onboarding or you dedicate that section to have lunch with them and let them know right. what that would look like moving forward. Now, I have lunch with you and I don't see you again. You've done something wrong in the organization. No, you know.
No.
I know startup is easier for startups, not as easy for medium-sized organizations. But I know of an employer who has over 100 employees, and he can tell you something or so about the people that work with him. That is right. our previous connection. He knows right. what they do, how they do it,
exactly.
and he stays mm-hmm. in touch. Yeah, so that's right. really, really important. And of course, the last one for when it comes to onboarding, that is very important. And this last one goes into what is onboarding and what is orientation, because people think uh-huh. those are the same. Uh-huh. They're not. Uh-huh. Orientation is just a little few section mm-hmm. in your onboarding process. Your onboarding exactly. process, depending on the organization, can run from a week to 3 months to uh-huh. 4 months for an onboarding, because it involves everything about them socializing into your culture,
yes.
you know, everything around the job, their role, their connection yes. with others, yes. everything. So it's not, yes. oh, we have a 2 days orientation, or you have a 3 days ooh. Orientation, and your onboarding ooh. Is done. No,
I've heard that. I've heard that.
So, uh-huh. which brings to the third important thing is uh-huh. that feedback is always missing. Where I see some employees, they've had the great orientation, they've had the great 1 week, but they are not sure who to talk to for anything that they need, or they're not sure who to confide in, who to speak to. How am I doing? You know, give me feedback. So that feedback, whether it's positive or negative, should be in abundance, because that is that stage where you need it for them to be able to be familiar, be clear, be empowered, be motivated, yes. all of that. So that feedback. Yes. So those are, I think I would say, are the top three when it comes wow. to onboarding. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. I can only echo that from my own practice, having watched, been doing this organizational culture audits and hearing feedback from employees. And the tragedy is, you know, in pure fundamental monetary terms, businesses lose a lot of productivity and money because they don't do the onboarding properly.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I agree. And you know, a lot of people as well, when you do the calculation of attrition, like when you tell them, okay, this person is leaving your organization, this is what the cost is to you. And mm-hmm. meaning the cost involves, you know, the cost of the person coming routine. In and going out and you replacing them. Right. And they are alarmed because they don't see that calculation in terms of the time they've invested in the training, the time they've invested in the hiring. So I like right. to keep track of this calculation so that when yes. somebody is leaving, I like to show them, even throughout their journey, I like to show them you recover from this expense at this stage of that employee's cycle. So you want to make sure that this investment, you get your return on it. Because some people yeah. say, oh, you come in, oh, not too good, you can go. They don't see, they don't understand the cost, not just financial cost as well. Your brand image, when you just want people to come in, stay a few days, oh, it's not working, go away, and there's no effort from them. So when you let them see what that cost is, they're quite alarmed, you know? They're quite alarmed.
Yeah, it's all reputation management, right? Sure.
I agree. Absolutely. I agree.
Just talk a little bit about performance management, because I think that's a really hot button for many, many employees out there and employers. And what do you do around that performance management space?
I think the performance management space, one of the most important things is just trying to understand what the employer is trying to. Because performance management is quite broad and we need to kind of have an understanding. And another important thing is being able to help employers move away from traditional performance management, which in my opinion does not work. Uh-huh. For them to switch to an approach that is specific for their organization and the context of their organization. So when I look into performance, I always like to understand what are you trying to measure when it comes to performance, and you know, your organization, what do you do within your organization? And, you know, understand what those are to be able to ensure that you're not just doing, oh, we have an annual review, we have goals that are reviewed, and we have, okay, what we do if you don't meet the goals, or what we do if you meet the goals. There's a lot more to it, to move it to what do you do as an organization today, in today's context, right now. You know, how do you ensure that the performance is actually accurately captured? You know, how can feedback be unbiased and not subjective? You know, so we move into those parts. And for performance, we always try to ensure that when we're designing it, and that's one part where I always get to, I get questions thrown back at me from employers when you want to design a performance review with them and you tell them, we need to involve your employees. And they'd be like, why? We try, when we create a performance evaluation tool or matrix, we kind of involve the employees. I don't know why organizations feel that you can create one and have it without your employees' involvement. It's an effort that requires that connection with the employees and understanding that as well.
But, you know, the management do their own thing, you know, and there's no real value unless they buy, an employee buys into it. Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, we draw on a lot of insights as well. So we performance review, moving from the traditional to something more modern, we try to see what are organizations doing. And there's so many types of reviews that organizations can adopt depending on their organization. Because some people say, oh, can we try something? People love the word 360. Can we try the 360 feedback process? Can we do, and then it may not be suitable for your own organization. Can we do MBO, you know, managing people by objectives? Let's understand your context first. You know, you cannot take something that works for organization A and apply it to organization B. So through research, and there are a lot of companies that do research as well. And we do our own research to make sure it's further tailored to our clients. So going by McLean and Company, McKinsey, they've written quite a lot of articles around models that could support design and performance review. One of them is a David Rocks kind of model. We're talking about status, I believe that's certainty, autonomy, relatedness, and fairness as those key modules that you use to shape your performance review. Is it fair? Is it related? Is it applicable? Is it relevant for your people and what you do? And of course, autonomy, control. Whose control is it? What's that sense of control? I'm talking about sense of control in the different types of environment. I love performance review, whether you're doing it paper-based or you're doing it using the software, company to company, is that tailored-made service. It's not like, oh, this is what works for company A. Of course, it works for you. No, it involves a lot of research, interview process, speaking to the employees, and then coming up with our recommendation. And of course, it's ultimately up to our clients to make a decision.
Yeah, that's lovely. That's really lovely. Because generic, this plug-and-play idea of performance management, I've seen it go down like a lead balloon, you know.
Yeah.
People just think, you can take this generic system, plug it in, and all, like, as you say, the flavor of the month, we all need 365. I mean, I love 365. Yeah. I saw it put in one organization, almost destroyed the organization, because it was just the change management was done so wrong and it just didn't suit the culture. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah,
that's lovely. That's lovely. Now, that sure gives our listeners a good idea.
Oh, I do have one question. One question that we can just both answer. Over the next 10 years, what do you plan to achieve? That is a beautiful question.
Okay, I'll answer that first. Okay. Next 10 years, I want to obviously build my coaching practice and my organizational development practice, but I'm 60 now, so I want to start downloading John, you know, so this is part of downloading John. So I want to start downloading in terms of my writing, because I do write and capturing some of the real life learnings, you know, in text possibly, but in spaces like this too, where I can leave behind, I mean, in a sense, it's my experience of the world. I can't claim it's the only experience of the world, but this is the kind of stuff I've learned as I've worked within, you know, my career, and, you know, try to do the thing of integrating my family and work and all that stuff, and just start consciously leaving pieces of soul behind. So like in our family, for example, in our bedroom, we have this huge chest. And in there, my wife and I both write journals, right? So we've gone all our journals for our children to inherit. Plus, we put all the birthday cards, the photographs and everything there. So this, we have created like a tome of family history, because I got so little of that from my parents. And I would love to learn a whole lot more about their lives and what was going on inside of them and stuff.
That's
right?
Quite interesting. I like the idea.
So that's in my our wills to our children. You know, one of them, for example, I've made the guardian of my journals to control it and so forth. You know, you should manage it. So we pass on as a family this legacy. Okay, this was the soul of your parents, more or less. Now, in terms of my working career, I want to do the same thing. I want to say, you know, this is what 60 years or 70 years of walking this earth is, I've learned before I have to go to do the departure lounge. So that's what I want to do.
That's great. I love the way you actually started that statement, download John. That's really key. And I think that will be a great space to be at. Actually, I'm going to tap into that as well. Maybe possibly look into download.
We're at different stages of our career. So what do you
think? Yeah. I think to add to that, I've always been someone who appreciates learning. So I'm hoping to, in 10 years, have a space where there's continuous learning at the core of everything we do at Parker HR. I think that for me would be a great thing. You know, even now to today, as much as people have their tiny project that they're working on, I'm always still pushing for, okay, what are you doing to develop yourself? What have you done? And so on. So it's always a part of my conversation with people. And also continue to create unique, well-understood, easy to materialize strategy for my clients. Yeah, yes. That'll be my 10 years goal.
Be beautiful. That'll be beautiful. You'll build an empire, Gifty. That'll be a beautiful empire. Your empire.
Thanks so much. It's a beautiful day today. Us trying something new. For today is the first time, John, that we didn't go to our unique parts. So today we're actually collaborating from our homes. And that's quite interesting. Interesting experience for our journey with our audience. Should we do what we always wrap up with?
Yep.
Talk a little bit about, you know, something that we're taking away.
So, okay, so last time I went first. You go first.
Okay, I'll go first. So I think for me, it's just the fact that why we always want and embrace that collaboration in person, we want to build that connection. I think today kind of further emphasizes the fact that the idea or the notion of being together to create connection is not what people actually put it out there to be. We can still build connection using the resources we have, using technology. Like, I'm looking at you right now, and it kind of feels like I'm sitting right next to you on the bench by the lake. And, you know, it's a good feeling. So I want to encourage people, you know, just don't let the fact that you cannot be in a physical space with someone break that connection. You know, connectivity can still happen using the various tools that we have today. We did stumble to get connected today in terms of the platform, but look at us. We did it.
We did it.
So that's a takeaway for me.
Okay. So the takeaway for me was when you told your story about your beginnings and your career, and you were not satisfied with those things you initially studied, So you knew it was scratching some sort of itch, but not the one you really wanted. And you weren't prepared to just sell out because you were frightened that somebody was going to think you were like indulgent or whatever. You had to say, there's something I'm looking for. Maybe I don't even know what this is yet, but there's something inside of me that is not satisfied until I find that thing. Yeah, I so love that story because I've just seen so many people do things because I think they have to, but then their heart's not really there. You know, you made me think of myself when I was thinking about doing an MBA, you know, and I remember going to one of my close friends and say, I'm off to do an MBA. And he said, no, John. I said, what do you mean, no? They said, you're a philosopher, John. You must go and do an MPhil in philosophy. And I said, but come on, man, what's a philosopher going to do? Who's going to pay a philosopher? You know, I was like, come on, you know, but I knew he was right. And it actually turned out perfectly well because it's exactly what I wanted to study. I was highly motivated and it opened all the doors I wanted to open for me. You know, so just like your story, you know. But yeah. I dusted myself and I needed somebody to say, hey, what did your heart say? You were very young and you had that, you saw that. And it's amazing. Yeah. Beautiful yeah. story.
Yeah, and that, as we encounter all these obstacles that you typically do happen, when people have obstacles, I tell them, you know what, it does happen, you know, so how are we going to deal with it? That passion, that love of what you do is actually something that will propel you, you know? Yes. So I always encourage, go for something you enjoy, go for something that you believe in, something that yes. speaks to you. Until next time, this is Gifty Parker and John Ballen.
Remember, during your busy week ahead, stay good, stay true, and stay beautiful.
Bye-bye.